One of the things that we do all the time as Catholics, week by week, is we remember the saints. Throughout the year, we remember those men and women who, in the course of their earthly lives, have chosen to exalt God. And perhaps some of you have heard this story before. I'm going to tell it even if you've heard it before, because I love this story, of a boy who goes to church with mom. It's Sunday morning. It's a beautiful day in July. This church is filled with stained glass windows. And the boy is saying to mom, "Mom, who is that in that window? Who's that in that window?" And she says, "Those are the various saints." And he thinks, "That's amazing." Well, next week he goes to school and he's in religion class. And the teacher says, "Can anyone here tell us what a saint is?" And the little boy puts up his hand and says, I can. A saint is someone through whom the light shines through. And that is exactly what it is to be a saint. Peter Kreeft, the great Catholic philosopher of our generation, takes a little farther. Listen to what he says. "Saints are wild. Saints risk everything on God. Saints are lovers in love with God and therefore with God's children, on fire with God's fire. That fire is the Holy Spirit. The meaning of life is to be a saint. And there's only one ultimate tragedy in life. It's to have not been a saint." Only one ultimate tragedy, to not be a saint. Well, today in the gospel, Jesus tells us the story of a man who is anything but a saint. This guy is shifty. This guy is here, not because Jesus is wanting to use this as a morality parable, because it's definitely not that. No, he tells this story about a man who, he says, is actually more prudent or more shrewd in investing in people in this generation than the saints are in thinking about what life is really all about. And so Jesus says, "The children of this age are more shrewd in dealing with their own generation than are the children of light." So here's this guy who's primarily concerned with making some financial dealings. He's very calculating in this way. He has a certain acumen and panache, which Jesus here commends, because what's he doing? He is learning to live in such a way that he is making deals that will have a long-term positive consequence. And what Jesus is saying is there are people of this generation who know nothing about God, who seem to be more shrewd in their daily dealings than are the children of light. Who are the children of light? Those people through whom the light shines through, those who are growing in sanctity. So Jesus is saying to us this afternoon, how are we going to invest in relationships in the present in order to have eternal dividends? How will we invest in the present in order to reap eternal dividends? And there are three things that I would like to suggest to you. Such investments need to be calculating. Such investments need to be costly. Such investments need to be consonant. They got to be calculating. They have to be costly and consonant. Let's look at each of those in three. First of all, our investments need to be calculating. In the parable, we need to remember that Jesus is commending this steward for his shady dealings because he is a calculating man. He's gone to his master's debtors and he said to one guy, "How much do you owe him?" 100 jugs of olive oil. Make it 50. The other says, "Well, I owe 100 bushels of wheat. Make it 80. Now, I thought at first, wait a second. The owner is going to look at the receipt and realize that it has been something done to it to mess it up. But in the ancient world, and I don't know why this is so, the person who actually owed the money wrote up their own receipt. And so it was okay for them to be able to take the receipt and write it again. But somehow the owner gets word of this. And then Jesus says he commended his dishonored steward. I thought, why is that? Well, one crook likes another crook. And the thing about guys in the ancient world who had lots of property, a lot of them were kind of like slum landlords. He was trying to do everything he could to make a buck. And so when he hears that his steward or his manager is doing something that is kind of ensuring that he gets ahead, he says, "Hey, that's pretty good." And he commends him for this action. And then we get to verse 9, which is the application of the parable. "I tell you," says Jesus, "make friends for yourself by means of dishonest wealth, so that when it's gone, they may welcome you into eternal homes." What's the point? Jesus is saying that the dishonest know how to use their money for gain, Well, those who are growing in honesty are also to use material things in order to secure heaven and the future. This means that to handle our property has eternal consequences. And to handle our property in a calculating way is actually something that Jesus commends. Here's the point about this parable, that we are to learn from this manager to use our possessions to gain our future and not to lose it. What does this then mean for us? In our present life, we are to become saints by how we use our money. And so let me ask you a question, and I ask myself this question as well. If Jesus said, "Can you open up your computer because I'd like to look at your budget with you?" would there be enough evidence to convict you of calculating investments? Investments that show generosity in giving, that's proportional in relation to your income and is sacrificial. Are you committed to the idea that through the local church, you are able to invest in eternal projects that require money in order to serve the kingdom? Now think of what we're doing here at St. Peter's. It would have been easier to say, let's not bother with any of this renovation. Let's just leave things the way they are. It will cost less money. It will be less disruptive. It will be so much easier. But I think Jesus, in light of today's parable, would say, I don't know if that's the right calculation to make. Why are we doing what we're doing here? It's so that St. Peter's can become ever more a center of Eucharistic worship, a center of teaching, where people are learning their faith and becoming committed and intentional Catholics. It's a center of mission. It is a center of outreach. And so let me put this question to us all. Have you calculated into your budget a pledge for Rock of Our Faith campaign? If you have, thanks be to God. If you have not, please prayerfully consider joining us in this calculating investment. First of all, they're calculating. Secondly, these investments need to be costly. And this comes through in what Jesus says next. He has three little verses that are like a proverb, and they go as follows. Whoever is faithful in very little is faithful also in much. Whoever is dishonest in a very little is dishonest also in much. If you've not been faithful with the dishonest wealth, who's going to entrust you with true riches? And if you have not been faithful with what belongs to another, who will give you what is your own? Now, supposedly, I did not know this until this week, and in case you think, boy, that Father Jonathan, he knows a lot. I don't know that much. I just have lots of books, and I read a lot. And so anyhow, here, this sort of argument is what logicians call an a fortiori argument, which means something going from the lesser to the greater. And that's what Jesus does with each one of these. If you're faithful with a little, you're going to be faithful with a lot. If you're dishonest with a little, you're going to be dishonest with a lot. And so let's think about this. What is Jesus saying here? The one faithful with today's nickels and dimes is the one who will be trusted with a big account. But it's easy for us to be indifferent about the little things and say, but when it comes to the big thing, you can count on me. The realism of these sayings is that most of life consists of a series of seemingly small opportunities. Most of us will not christen a ship, write a book, end a war, appoint a cabinet, dine with the queen, convert a nation, or be burned at the stake. I don't think it's happening for very many of us this week. More likely, the week that is before us will provide an opportunity to give a cup of water, write a note, visit a nursing home, teach a catechetical class, share a meal, tell a child a story, go to choir practice, and feed the neighbor's cat. But here's the point. As we learn to be faithful with the little things, God will make us faithful with the big things. And here is where we need to appreciate that as we are learning to live calculating lives where we are generous in small things, Jesus will call us to costlier investments with greater things. And what do the saints understand? They get that. They understand that life is about getting closer to Jesus. Life is about getting more committed. Life is about offering everything to him. Calculating, costly, and finally, investments that are consonant. What I mean by this is that we are wanting to live our lives in such a way that there is harmony and agreement. That's what the word consonant means. There is an integrity in our life, an integrity that St. Paul speaks about in today's epistle when he says we are to offer prayers and supplication and intercessions for everyone, especially for kings and those in high positions. And listen to the reason for it. So that we may lead a quiet and peaceable life in all godliness and dignity. What is a consonant life like? It's a prayerful life. What is a consonant life like? It is a life marked by deepening sanctity that exudes a peaceful godliness and dignity. Such a life will thrill at the opportunity to gather for corporate worship, especially Mass. People will be excited about coming to Mass because there they're going to meet Jesus in a special way. Such a life will desire to reflect God in compassion towards the poor. And in that first reading from Amos, God was judging the people because they were not living a consonant life. Listen to again what he says. Hear this, you who trample the needy and bring to ruin the poor of the land, saying, when will the new moon be over so that we may sell grain? And when will the Sabbath be over so that we may offer wheat for sale? In other words, they're looking at their watches and saying, when can I get out of worship so I can go back to making a buck? That's what that's all about. And here God is saying, the Lord has sworn by the pride of Jacob, surely I will never forget any of their deeds. Never forget our deeds. So if we're learning to live a more consonant life, a life that is more harmonious, God's going to remember that. But if we're living a dissonant life, a life that is in conflict and clashing, and there is a lack of integrity, Amos says God will remember that too. And so here, let me bring this homily to a conclusion by reiterating what I said at the beginning. We are to live our lives to witness to Jesus so that our consonant lives will be a sign to those who do not know Jesus, that we are different kind of investors. We are people who are preoccupied with eternal investments. People who know that Jesus desires all people to be saved and to come to a knowledge of the truth. And what is that knowledge? Well, first of all, it's to know that we've been created by God. We have been created to be like stained glass windows. We have been created to be children of light, who are calculating, costly, and consonant investors. Investors who are cooperating with Jesus in the salvation of our souls and the souls of others, and the soul of Abigail, who will be baptized today. This investment is the chief purpose of our life and the end of our life as well.